What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Baritone Podcast. My name is Anthony Hoisington, and I am one of the producers of the show, and we have a great one for you today. This interview is with Ryan Anderson, whose music goes by the name of Opal Hush. And he's a very dear friend of mine. We grew up together in upstate New York playing music and exploring musical landscape together and kind of being in some crappy band. We were in some crappy bands together, but we did happen to make some good music along the way. We would often play music 4 to 5 times a week, starting, you know, 5 or 6 in the evening and not ending until the next morning. One of our first bands together was a band called McClurg Family Singers, and our final band was a band called Adelaide. And when I think about my early formation as a musician, I can't think of any major milestones where Ryan wasn't present, and oftentimes a major inspiration to me. We listened to classic bands for the first time together, like Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, and Joe Cocker. And we also grew up in the time in the 90s when there was a lot of great underground music, and we got into those bands like Pedro the Lion and Damian Jurado, Godspeed You Black Emperor, Mogwai, Sonic Youth, Red House Painters, Cocteau Twins, and Sunny Day Real Estate, just to name a few. I mean, it was the era of mixtapes after all. So much good music to be shared together with friends. Well, Ryan now lives in the Philadelphia area and has done so much since our teenage years. In fact, he's owned a cabinet-making shop in California, helped create a pizzeria in the Philadelphia area called Pizza Brain, and now works for a company that repairs, restores old vintage typewriters. You heard me right, typewriters. Old Bear Records is releasing Opal Hush's brand new record entitled Remote Viewer. In fact, it's out now on all major digital platforms, so go get it. It's a great record. You're going to love it. So, enough with the introductions. Without further ado, here's Ryan Anderson of Opal Hush, along with Mo, myself, Jeremy, who played on the record, and Lucas. Enjoy. Sky as a kind of sign of history or the password of time.
Who's in the studio today?
I know. All right. So Mo, Mo's here today. Mo, how do you know Ryan Anderson?
All right. Well, I used to go to high school. Well, I was in high school. You were, Anthony was in middle school.
Yeah.
And then we became best friends because we were on student council.
I was an overachiever.
Yeah. I became best friends with Anthony at Amherst Christian Academy, the school, because we were both from this little town called Akron,
yeah,
New York, not Ohio. And he ended up taking me to the youth group that he attended, and the first two people I met were Matthew, who was the one that started the band with them, and our friend Steve, and then Ryan was the next friend that I met through.
Mm-hmm. What year do you think that was? Like 96?
Well, Anthony, you left school in 95, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think I was...
I think so.
I think I was in 10th grade and you were in 8th grade maybe, or I don't know, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it was around that
time. It was like
time,
mid-90s.
Yeah. We're old.
Yeah, we are.
Because I remember you showing me Focal Point, and that album came out in 95, and that was the year that you left.
Glad we could date that.
That's how we do it.
Although, you know, I was just having a conversation today with people about one of my first experiences in school where I felt like things stopped and teachers recognized or students were like was the day that Kurt Cobain died.
Yeah.
And everybody around the table today, when I was having that discussion, was like, that was a significant experience. Like, you know, because we were around some older gentlemen who were like, the TVs were wheeled into their, you know, when like the assassination of John Kennedy or
right.
So like Kurt Cobain dying to them is like, who was even that? Who is that?
Yeah.
He was in Nirvana. But anyways, you know, I just, my only real memory of that school was for whatever reason.
That's the, like to them, it was like, oh, if Gilbert Gottfried died, and you're like, who cares?
Exactly. It was like, okay.
He, who didn't die, right?
Yeah.
He's still around. Voicing parrots of kinds of another.
Aladdin, yeah.
All right. So Jeremy Thompson.
Oh, wait. Really briefly? I remember, you mentioned Kurt Cobain dying. I remember seeing a newspaper that it was like the, you know, on the front cover of the newspaper when I was in detention, seeing that Kurt Cobain died. Wow. So it was very fitting.
Yeah. It was a significant moment.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Oh, yeah. For
but I don't actually remember realizing how significant it was. Like, I knew he was in a band, but I really didn't get into his music until a few years later.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the other thing about Nirvana that I remember, and this is like when Siamese Dream by Smashing Pumpkins came out, and I remember, so that was like when I was like 12, and I had like a little clock radio that I would listen to 103.3 The Fox in Buffalo.
The Fox.
Oh, no.
Foxy.
And I remember hearing Disarm by Smashing Pumpkins playing, and being a 12-year-old, I remember calling my sister, who was 9 at the time, into my room and telling her that this was Nirvana. I have such a specific memory of that. It's really funny.
That is funny.
Anyhow.
He died in 94.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
94.
I thought Guns N' Roses was Poison for a long time.
Yeah.
Close. Close. So, along with us on the ride today in the podcast journey, for the podcast journey, is Jeremy Thompson, who plays on a lot of the records, if not all of them, here at Old Bear. And second time, welcome back.
Thanks.
Yeah. So, do you remember how you met Ryan and vice versa?
Well, he used to come to the youth group that I was a part of for the girls.
Yep.
Friday nights.
I remember he would show up without any shoes.
Be me, you, Steve.
No shoes. Yeah, he was like this barefoot, long-haired, hippie-looking creature with rainbow pants and stuff like that. And I thought, there's my kind of person right there.
Because you were stuck in like with a bunch of
I was over in
the corduroys with the cutouts on the side.
Yeah,
I was over in OP, and it was a bunch of preps that played soccer and wore
Orchard Park.
You know, sweater vests and never really felt right there. And then I saw Ryan coming in with Matthew, and then I met all you guys and Pete, and felt like I found my people, and they were on the other side of the
the
Buffalo.
And I knew your cousin Elizabeth, who is really good friends with two of my good friends in Philadelphia. So we have this like.
You're gonna have to say it again because it's just funny. Like
we're doing it.
It was exactly the same as I remember. The way you were looking at me and everything was just the way you did. Your cousin.
Yes. And I pointed at you. Yeah.
So I have to break in here and let you know something that was going on. We had actually started to record for about 30 minutes prior to what you're hearing, and the computer crashed in the studio, leaving us with absolutely nothing and having to start over again from scratch. And so that's why we're all kind of laughing and joking. Because we had already talked about some of this stuff and we were trying to recreate our conversation, and it got to be really funny. And so, just as a little clue in, that's what's going on right now. Back to the show. Point finger.
Yes, but my cousin Elizabeth.
Yeah, so we had friends in common that connected us also. But we were never really good friends, but we would be around each other all the time. And I was always, I remember going to some like county fair in like Clarence, and you were playing music there.
Wow, yeah.
And you were playing guitar. And I remember with Pete, I remember telling like all these people about your guitar playing and being like so amazed by how good you were at guitar. But I remember always seeing you around, and we had all these people in common, but we never really spent a lot of time together.
Yeah, we were like always friends with each other's friends.
Yeah.
And knew of each other very
and
well.
And now, which is amazing, is Jeremy is here and playing some stuff on what I'm recording at Old Bear.
Yep.
And it's funny, like, I don't know, jumping to this, but we, Anthony and I, recorded Adelaide, that band Adelaide. And after, then I moved to California with Joey and Mike and some people. And Mo.
Well, kind of.
I didn't include you because you were already there. You left.
Yeah, a month or two
you paved before. The path for us.
I did find your apartment.
That's true. But yeah, the Adelaide album that we recorded, we kind of broke up shortly after that because half of us moved to California. And then Jeremy was playing on that album when you guys would continue to like play that live. So we have all these weird overlapping musical things going on.
It's like just great. Extended from the same musical family.
Yeah, but this is like the first time we've actually.
This is the most time I think we've ever hung out.
Honestly,
in the last 2 days or so. And so it's been nice.
It's been really nice, But we've known each other for like 20 something years.
It's
wild. It's crazy.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Fast forwarding, you know, to now, as I try to segue a little bit here. So you're here recording some new songs. And one of the things I noticed about 20 years later is your playing has kind of stayed in the same vein, which I...
Right, I haven't progressed at all in 27 years.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Still holding it down.
Still haven't taken any lessons or anything.
Yeah. Still barely know.
Do you know
play.
What a G is yet?
I've seen it.
I've seen it someone play many times. Great G chords.
Yeah.
One of the things I've always admired about Ryan's playing, as you will hear, is a single note technique where he is there. It's almost without rules in a way, like. We were talking a little bit before about how music theory was something that you really never.
Yeah, like when we've been recording, Eric or someone will say like, "Oh yeah, that go from like the one to the four or whatever," and I just say okay, but I have no, I don't know what I'm doing because like when, especially when I'm playing something on the piano or something, I don't have that background and. I don't really know what I'm doing.
Right.
I think I'm a better creative player than I am a technical player. And yeah, but
super creative. I think the thing that I've always admired, and this is what I would say about your playing, is if I was to play three chords and ask you to play something over it, you know, there are 1,000 conventional ways of playing apart, like a single note melody line over those three chords. You always seem to choose, you know, the 1,001, you know, part.
Yep.
And that's what I've always admired most about your playing is that I'm just as surprised when it comes out. I'm like, that is really cool. I would have never in a bazillion years thought to play it that way. And still, to this day, your music continues to do that. And so, you know, I'm a person that finds comfort in consistency. And so you bring me a lot of comfort.
That's what I'm here for, Ant.
Yeah, you are, man. But maybe explain to us a little bit about some of the influences and what shaped your playing.
Yeah. So I know what you're saying, and I don't exactly know what I'm doing half the time.
Right.
But I think what I'm trying to do is figure out something, yeah, just a little off kilter that fits in with something else, with the other chord structure or whatever is being played, and figure out how to add, just very simply, with sometimes just single notes, something you're not really expecting. And I was talking earlier about how one of my biggest, honestly, because it's an early influence, one of my biggest musical influences is the motorcycle outside this window.
We have some serious industry going on. Yeah. Right now.
Is this old Tooth and Nail band that we grew up kind of listening to back in the 90s called Starflyer 59. Mm-hmm. And especially their early records, like Silver and then the album Gold, and there's a couple other ones that I really loved. Yeah, that one's all right.
He's still making me. I mean,
he's still doing it. Yeah, and it's still really good. Yeah,
it is good.
But I think those earlier ones were a lot noisier and kind of like verged on like this shoegazy sort of thing. And again, I don't exactly know what he's doing or what the chords are or whatever, but I just remember listening to those albums just hundreds of times, and I still listen to them. I listened to Gold on the drive up here from Philadelphia, actually, because I was thinking about this, where there's maybe just like a normal chord going on, and then there's like one note that it fits with that chord, but it is just slightly... it's maybe slightly dissonant, or but it still works.
Sure.
And there's like sort of like jazz chords being incorporated into, or what I would consider a jazz chord,
whatever that is. Yeah, yeah.
That fits in with this, and it's also this kind of like noisy rock and roll, you know, distorted stuff. But there's
sorry, I
what
think
are you laughing
I'm just
at?
Gonna excuse myself.
What is going on?
I just keep thinking about what happened the last I know we're not there anymore.
But we're actually in new territory right now.
I know, but you know how you start getting in your own head and then
I do.
So everyone's laughing because the last time I was explaining like Starflyer's early music where it's this noisy, then the computer crash, and it was the most painfully loud noise in our ears, and we all like screamed. And
yeah, so we've been doing this for about 20 minutes, right? Yeah. And we had done this already
for almost 40.
Like 40. So we're talking about the same things for your entertainment. Yeah. Yeah.
And we're expecting the same sort of horrible thing to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so they'd be playing these chords that just have some other note in them that completely changes the feel of that, you know, simple G or C or A minor or whatever it is, you know? Mm-hmm. I just really like felt something listening to it and didn't really know what was happening sonically, but it really just blew my mind, and it was like my favorite music for a very long time. So I think like that, just finding something that fits with whatever is being played, but changes it enough that it almost as unrecognizable as just like a, you know, just a simple normal chord, which is great. Mm-hmm. But just adding some subtle thing to the music that brings it to another level or something.
Thank you.
So I'm always kind of looking for that chord or looking for that note or looking, trying to figure out how to add a note to some more conventional thing that I'm playing.
Yeah.
And I think this is like led me, so all the songs I'm recording here are in, I think two, maybe there's one in a third alternate tuning.
Sure.
And the way that those tunings kind of developed, and I'm not even sure if they're kind of standard alternate tunings or not, but I would be recording stuff, and this was back in the days when we were like the McClurg Family Singers Adelaide, and I would go home a lot of times after us having band practice for like 6 hours until two in the morning.
Yep.
I'd go home, and my parents had this old, you know, desktop computer.
We decided to set up near a highway.
Yeah.
So
we are in the,
So start over. So you would go home.
So after band practice, I would go home and my parents had this very old, this is the mid to late 90s, very old like desktop computer. And it had like some really horrible old recording program that our friend, our old bandmate Joey gave to me. And on like a floppy disk.
Record half the song, stop.
Yeah.
Wait for it to catch up.
Right. So I started just recording like little ideas, just basic ideas, and I would like come up with like all these layered things, but all the songs, they're all for the most part instrumental stuff. Just be like a minute or so, minute or two, just short little ideas that I would just keep building on. And as I was doing this, I would trying to like play something, and I'm playing maybe a chord or a couple notes and finger picking and trying to add one of those notes that I'm like looking for into it, and I couldn't reach it or it was really hard for me to play. So I would tune one string, you know, a couple steps up or down to be able to hit that note, and then I'd keep going along, and then I'd try and add a part onto it, but the guitar would still be tuned that way.
Sure.
So I'd be playing another part and try and hit another note that I couldn't reach or couldn't play well. So I would tune another string up or down a little bit. So it just ended up developing or turning into this tuning that my guitar was always at, and I would start writing things. And that for me was maybe the biggest influence on what I'm recording here
even today.
Because it'd be in this other tuning and I'd have to figure out where the chords were. But because the tuning is different, the voicing of the chords or whatever it is a little off.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hitting notes that maybe aren't normally in these chords. And even like, honestly, one of the tunings, two of the strings are tuned to the exact same pitch note.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing, but I'm playing different things on them. So it's, again, like that isn't maybe super intuitive, but it led me to kind of develop this feel for the kind of chords that I'm using and finding, just new ways of playing kind of the tones or chords that I'm looking for.
Sure.
Which is,
Well, it makes sense too. I mean, I think like if you are a fan of Starflyer 59, anyone listening, if they've ever heard Starflyer 59, I think the singing style is very similar. You have a very similar singing style now that I'm putting that together. Like, I wouldn't have maybe put that together right away, but now I'm thinking about, like, having heard, you know, all the tracks that you've been recording. And I've heard you do some of your solo stuff before I got here, obviously, but never really, like, made that connection.
Yeah, honestly, me either. But I think you're right. Yeah, just kind of his subtle and
understated
kind of fitting in. And that's the thing too. As I guess technically, I am a singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
Although that makes me a little uncomfortable, because maybe my association with what that means is not really what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do a more kind of like fuller project sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I want kind of the vocals to kind of be more of an instrument in the music, as opposed to, all right, the vocals are on top because I want you to hear what I'm singing or whatever. I want them to be kind of incorporated into the music.
Jer often talks about that, like when we're like, we'll be driving and we'll hear, like we'll be listening to something, and you know, you often, Jer often mentions like vocals seem separate from the music, mm-hmm. you know, like you.
Yeah, I feel like when I was growing up listening to music, we keep talking about the 90s, you listen to a lot of albums from back then, and you know, now you hear stuff and it's all about the vocal being way up top, because mm-hmm. that's all that matters is right. just hearing this person, this, you know, that's the thing we want to elevate. But maybe. There was a time when like you listen to old Radiohead albums or whatever,
yeah,
and it's all happening and you hear yeah. every little bit of it. It's not, there's nothing that is less important
right.
in a way.
And that specifically is something I was going to mention. I grew up being a huge fan of Radiohead also, and specifically that band, like, and you know, more in the later years, the Tommy York's vocals are literally just another instrument.
Yeah,
like it
yeah.
doesn't matter if you hear what he's saying, mm-hmm. but the way he sings is really unique in the sense that it is another instrument.
Totally.
It's a
totally.
Part of the band. Yeah. 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 And I think a lot of the stuff you hear nowadays is more, there's one person who is like, this is my project, and it is about the vocals. So mm-hmm. it makes sense, but
it's not about bands sitting in their, you know, basements for 7 hours a day, just like coming up with
right.
what does the music yeah, yeah. do? What does the music say? Right. Does it carry the same heart that mm-hmm. we're actually, what we're singing about yeah. or whatever?
So yeah, it's like Starflyer, that is the kind of thing. Like you can almost, you basically have no idea what he's singing, like mm-hmm. the lyrically, you can hear almost nothing, and especially like the earlier albums. But it's like this kind of like melody kind of that fits in with everything else that's going on. And that's the kind of music that I love. And it, like a comparison, even though I know they're very different, but they kind of share a lot of the same things. Like that band, My Bloody Valentine, mm-hmm. is like one of my favorite bands of all time. And they are very like that shoegazy, I hesitate to say the word noise again so that the computer doesn't crash.
Don't but, say it.
Loud.
They're very loud and, you know, chaotic. Mm. But the vocals, you'll never know what they're singing, but it is just this kind of like other layer of instrumentation and melody that is profoundly beautiful and chaotic almost.
Sorry to interrupt, but have yeah. you ever fallen in love with music that's like in a different language? Because when they're
yeah.
singing, you don't know what they're saying.
So no idea.
It doesn't like
yeah.
interrupt mm-hmm. just the beautiful
yeah, you're
of their
just
voice.
Listening to the melody yeah, and know yeah. that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Astrid yeah. Gilberto was one
oh,
of
yeah.
the ones that really
Definitely.
First drew me into that.
Yeah.
Going by a different name though with this project.
Yeah. I think it's going to be Opal Hush.
Yep. And where is that from?
This is these two words, and again, this kind of fits in with this idea of what I was talking about with the vocals, which, you know, a lot of times they are the main focus and I don't necessarily want them to be. I like the sound of them. Like, I like the sound of these two words together. And I first read it in, when I was reading a few years ago, Ulysses by James Joyce. Mm-hmm. I forget exactly what the passage is, but it has these two words, opal, hush, in it. And then later looking it up, it's like this really obscure reference to a poetry movement that someone referred to as the Opal Hush Poets back in either the late 1800s or early 1900s. And it's just been this these two words that I just like the sound of together. And I do like visual art stuff as well as music. And I've kind of like used that as like the name for that art. Mm-hmm. And it's like an Instagram handle.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Opal Hush.
Opal Hush.
That's cool. I think one of the things that I... one of the songs I like is Should Have Been an Anchor, right?
It's just called Should Have Been.
Okay, Should Have Been.
And Anchor is... You're probably confused because Eric and Chris like... conflating all of the song titles together.
Well, the title,
there's another one called Heart Like an Anchor.
Oh, Heart Like an Anchor. Yeah. So Should Have Been is the one I like.
Yeah.
Well, the one I'm drawn to. I like them all in different ways, but as you know. This, you know, it feels good, but maybe I don't, you know, I hate asking this question because I get asked it all the time myself, but like what was like, because I know some of these songs, you, like you said, you kind of started working them maybe in some ways 20 years ago or you know, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you have like more of a story, but what is that song particularly like mean to you lyrically, or when you were writing it, what were you thinking about?
Okay, so lyrically in general, I guess I'll start there. The stuff I write, and I guess it sort of fits in with the Opal Hush thing. I really do like a lot of like poetry, and I read a lot, and I'm drawn to language in mm-hmm. general. And I think a lot of the lyrics that I write are kind of conveying almost not specifically a one idea, but conveying a feeling or an emotion or mm-hmm. something like that, which I think a lot of like good poetry, the way that, yes, thank you. The kind of writing and poetry that I like kind of creates an atmosphere,
yeah.
creates a feel, and maybe you don't always know exactly what the writer is talking about, but they're conveying something that I can relate to, and I like that sort of thing. So a lot of the stuff that I write lyrically is kind of conveying an image or an atmosphere or something like that. And it's hard to say exactly what I'm trying to say because it's not a storyline or it's not about something specific, but I'm looking for ways of conveying an idea or an atmosphere. The other stuff that I write is very self-reflective in the sense that I'm trying to write something or create something lyrically that is almost like a lens with which I can look at myself with. Mm-hmm. Like it's like this tool to try and understand myself and why I do the things I do or feel the things I feel or something like that. So I think that one should have been specifically... is more on that level mm-hmm. where it is almost like a self-critique. And as I wrote that song and those lyrics, I'm trying to understand myself. You know, I'm trying to like get deeper into my psychology or what is going on in my mind to understand myself. So it's not necessarily, again, some story that I'm telling, but it is a very personal sort of exploration of how I'm feeling or what I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. So I think that's
I particularly like that tune.
And that one specifically, I think I said earlier when we were listening through it and Jeremy was playing some stuff on it, that it's very like, it's almost like upbeat and has this like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're right. It's...
Boppy sort of... I don't know.
Starts off with like a drum thing and then it... Yeah.
It's very upbeat.
It's bright.
It's bright, yeah. And it's not... So lyrically, it's in contrast to... The music is in contrast to the lyrics because they are very like introspective and at some points maybe a little dark. But I was saying earlier that I was... As we were working on the song, it kind of turned into that kind of like upbeat, bright feel. And that's not normally the kind of stuff that I would like say, I'm going to write a song like this.
Yeah.
And it's going to have this feel to it. And that's another thing like with my songwriting is I honestly don't know where the songs are going to go as I'm writing them, either lyrically or musically. And they always end up in a place that is, you know, funnily, is like a little surprising to me. Mm-hmm. But that's what I really like about doing that. And I mentioned earlier, I do like kind of like visual art stuff and sculpture stuff and different things like that. As I'm writing music or making music, it feels very similar to visual art to me, the way I like engage with it, where I'm starting off with this like bass and I'm discovering where it's kind of going or what it's turning into. And that is the most important personal creative thing I can do is working towards something and figuring out how to make this something that is enjoyable for me to listen to or it feels relevant and it feels more like a sculptural thing to me. Like I'm adding layers onto the bass and I don't know what the third layer will be until I've made the second layer.
Sure.
And that is what is my favorite thing about making music is it feels like I am sculpting something.
Thanks again for listening to Baritone Podcast. We are a small little independent label, and so you listening to this podcast means so very much to us. It would also mean a lot to us if you went and downloaded Opal Hush's Remote Viewer now on iTunes, if you streamed it on Spotify, Amazon Music, Bandcamp, wherever you get your music from, he's there. Also, another cool thing, we had such a great conversation that we split this up into two episodes. So be on the lookout for the second Opal Hush episode. And do us a favor, go on over to iTunes and leave us a review, a rating and a review. And tell you what, if you do that for us, maybe you've done it in the past, do it again. And we'll get a hold of you. We'll take a look at the reviews and the ratings and people that have left us one. We'll pick a random person and send you a free Old Bear t-shirt for doing that. Thanks. I want to thank Lucas for helping produce the show as always. I want to thank Old Bear Records for being an amazing group of folks and artists. And last but not least, Sarah Bridgman for creating the artwork for the show. Until next time, peace and be kind to one another.